Good afternoon, I'm Jamila Erickson. Today's midday interview, we have a special guest and a special interviewer. Jason Hess is one of our MFA graduate fellows here at WHQR, and he's going to be talking right now with retired Judge Stuart Nam.
Thanks, Jamila. I'm here with retired Judge Stuart Nam. He has a new book out. It's a memoir, a legal memoir, called The Whistleblower's Lament, The Perverted Pursuit of Justice in the State of New York. It's a provocative title, to be sure. And I'm just going to shoot off to him to give us the jacket summary of the book, but I'm going to give you just a snippet, a teaser. In the early 80s, he was a judge in Suffolk County, New York, and he began to see testimonies that he was getting that seemed to have similar narratives. Many of the folks were saying that they had been forced. They had literally had confessions beat out of them. And as a young judge, you were on the side of the police. You said, of course, they would say these things. But then you started to see a pattern, and that pattern led you to suspicion, which ultimately has led you to spending a long time trying to tell this story. Now, what was that pattern, and what period of your life were you a judge in Suffolk County?
I became a judge when I was 42 years old. It was a quirk that I even got elected. I was a Democrat in a Republican town, and I always wanted to be a judge. That was my ambition as a boy while I was at City College of New York, where I would go to a night court on Saturday night for a Saturday night date with my future wife. And I had told my former partner, who was then the county chairman, that I was interested in being a judge, just talking with him. And then one day, and I never thought it was going to happen, one day I got a call, and they said they wanted to nominate me for district court judge in the town of Brookhaven, which was a very conservative town, very Republican. And I knew I couldn't win, but if you tell people you'd like to be a judge, if they ask you to run, you run. And it turned out that Watergate happened. There was a scandal in the town, and I ended up winning by 58 votes out of 68,000 votes cast.
And what year was this?
And this was 1975. And 6 years later, when I ran for re-election, I could have run against Mickey Mouse because the Republicans had taken back the town. And nobody really knows who a judge is. You're on the ballot, but people either generally vote party line or they don't vote at all.
And I think, now you say that as an active judge, but here I think people are starting to recognize who you were. You've received a number of awards for this whistleblowing activity, as you call it, and you are getting some recognition now. Describe, what were you seeing when you were an active judge after getting that sort of, you said it, surprise judgeship? But if you somehow coerced your girlfriend into going to night court for dates, I think that you must have been planning on a career
I was a poor kid from the tenements of Brooklyn, so you don't really plan on becoming a judge. You might say you'd like to be one, but what happened was basically I was a very tough judge. Mm-hmm. I believed in law and order. When I became a judge was after the 60s. 60s was a pretty lawless time in New York State and all over the country. And I got a reputation of being tough when I was in the lower court before I went into the county court. I sometimes increased bail that the DA requested, didn't think it was enough.
The hanging judge.
Yeah, I was called the hanging judge. I was called Maximum Stew because when I went into the county court, which was the court of criminal jurisdiction in Suffolk County, I was one of three judges handling all the homicides in the county. And I got in that very early. But I think they appointed me to that job because I had the reputation of being a tough judge. And I think that the police probably recommended that I get that job. I didn't know that. But when I look back in the history, I think that was so. And I was tough. And New York State at that time did not have the death penalty. And I was trying many intentional murder, felony murder cases, which were capital cases. And I felt after I gave, if there was a fair trial in my courtroom, and invariably, I believe my courtroom was a fair courtroom. I was a very activist judge. I would question if I saw a defense counsel who wasn't doing a job. I would actually interfere in the questioning. So I was a tough judge. And believe the cops when they testified, believe the homicide detectives. And by the way, those homicide detectives at that time were the highest paid police in the United States.
And you're saying this, it's important to note, in the past tense. You're saying you believed the cops, you believed the DA's office, you were completely with the program at the time. And one thing that is very interesting about this book is to see a judge who was known for giving out the maximum sentences for those heinous crimes. It was 24 years to life?
25 years to life.
And you gave that frequently and added things onto it if you could at times. And so you were known as a hard-nosed judge, a hardline judge. But then this book is not written from that perspective. You're actually going back and you're recounting, you're going back to your trial notes and you're giving us snippets of your trial notes and you're saying, that's how I felt as a young man, but here is how I feel now. And if you're just tuning in, you're tuning into the Midday Interview. I'm a guest interviewer. My name is Jason Hess. I'm here with retired Judge Stuart Nam, and we're talking about his memoir, A Whistleblower's Lament.
Well, what happened was, and the chapter of my book is called The Eye-Opener.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is I had a trial involving a young African-American young man who was charged with attempted murder of a police officer. And that would be a capital case in New York.
Yeah.
And so normally a legal aid attorney would represent an indigent defendant. But in the case of a capital case, and he was indigent, I appointed an attorney to represent him. And he was an African-American attorney that had gone to law school with me, knew him for 4 years at night school at Brooklyn Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a good lawyer. And I appointed him. And he challenged the jury panel and began to hear during the hearings that the commission of jurors would solicit young jurors from the white neighborhoods, but would not solicit the African-American neighborhoods. And so I, as a judge, virtually never, and I had tried probably 7 or 8 murders by that time, had never seen a young African-American on a jury panel. And 3 district attorneys, the top trial attorney in the district attorney's office who tried cases in front of me, 2 others, came in under oath and testified, and we knew the statistics of what the percentage of young blacks were in the community.
So it was a known fact.
It was a known fact.
We had always, yeah.
Eyes. Well, no, but they came in and testified and said they saw a young African American in 1 out of every 3 trials.
Mm.
I had already tried 7 or 8 murders, and I had never seen one. The lawyer that I appointed went outside, brought 3 lawyers in and said they had never seen one.
So this led to revelations
about
the greater environment.
Right. I saw that these are 3 DAs
mm-hmm.
sworn to tell the truth who were representing the people mm-hmm. who came into my courtroom and perjured themselves. I never accused them of the perjury, but I wrote it in my notes that they were perjuring themselves.
Yeah.
So I call it my eye-opener because then I had 2 major homicide cases right after that. And the juries acquitted 2 defendants who were really guilty of murder
mm-hmm.
because of the testimony they heard from the Suffolk County Police Department.
So that was how it began. And then once you started to formally try and get these situations investigated and get the environment of Suffolk County investigated, you were pretty much ostracized, right?
Oh, well, yeah.
And I think that's an important thing because you're still telling this story in spite of that. And what do you think, reading this book, what role do you think that this book and this story could have in the lives of young people considering a career in law or considering a career, maybe they want to be a judge?
Right. Well, in places like New York and North Carolina, where trial judges are elected in the system of government, if they continue that, it'll never change.
Mm-hmm.
I went to see when the investigation started because I wrote Governor Cuomo, the State Investigation Commission came in. I went to see another judge, a very good friend of mine, a very decent man who was handling the same kind of case system as me because they asked me, was there any other judge they could talk to? And I went to see him and I said, Harry, you know what's going on. And he said to me, Stuart, should I read the newspapers? I said, these people would like to talk to you because you're handling the same cases as I am. It can't only be happening in my courtroom. And his answer to me was, Stuart, I just can't get involved. I have to run again next year.
Mm.
I think that says it all. I really do. No, I had brought a black cloud over the county. When I was up for re-election at the end of my term, my former law partner, who had been, while I was a judge, the New York State Democratic chairman, could not elect anybody in Suffolk County. They were the minority party. The Republican Party gave him 3 judgeships and mine in exchange for not renominating me.
That's a very telling. It's a very telling number, absolutely, and I think it speaks to the politics of the situation. I think that it is an interesting book for anyone who is interested in the politics of law and order, and I think that that's something we hope don't mingle as often as they do, or the politics and law and order. And if you want to hear more from Stuart Nam, if you want to learn more about the book, you can look it up online. You can purchase it online. It's called The Whistleblower's Lament, The Perverted Pursuit of Justice in the State of New York. It's published by Hellgate Press out of Oregon. And he will be in the gallery, in the M.C. Ernie Gallery downtown at WHQR on Monday, June 9th. It's speaking with Ben Steelman of Star News for
just a one thing. I'm also going to have a book signing, and I'm going to speak about my book at Barnes & Noble's in Mayfair this coming Saturday at noontime.
This coming Saturday. Okay, yeah. Meet Judge Stuart Nam. Speak about his memoir this coming Saturday at Mayfair. You're listening to the Midday Interview. My name is Jason Hess. You're listening to 91.3 WHQR.